on goggles or turn away. Do not remove goggles or face first until fireball dissipates. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The shock wave will arrive shortly. Keep firm footing until wave passes.
To BCFM's Politics Show with old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers, Charlie Skelton, Hannah Borno over in Turin, and me, Tony Gosling. All eyes on Singapore for the North Korea talks and the G7 in Canada, but the real rulers, Bilderberg, meet in secret in Italy tonight. We go live to Turin, northwest Italy, where the New World Order, that's the banksters that buy our political parties and the maniacs that start all those illegal wars, trying to grab resources and deny them to the other superpowers. The high priests of globalisation, the creators of the European Union. So, who are the British participants at Bilderberg 2018 in Turin? Who is this Democratic Party state governor who looks tipped to take over as US president from Trump in 2020? And who's the spider in the middle of the web, Henry Kissinger's choice to take over as the next Chancellor of Germany? Who is the former West German Chancellor from the 1960s who was a former Nazi propaganda radio chief? Anna Bilderberger, and another former Bilderberg participant who worked at Deutsche Bank, stealing the wealth of the Jews in the middle of the Second World War, another so-called Untermensch. Back to the current meeting, and why are there so many Google and Google spin-off participants? What is quantum computing? And what's its military and surveillance usefulness? It's rumoured to be close to replicating human consciousness. What are these guys up to? Anyway, we go live to Turin now, hopefully, to speak to Hannah Borno, who's joining me on the line. Hi, Hannah.
Hi, Tony. Hello.
Can you just tell us where you are?
Yeah, currently I'm just outside the Lingotto complex. The actual meeting is taking place in the NH Lingotto Torino Congress. It's all in the old Fiat factory, and it's right adjacent to the current Fiat headquarters. As we know, John Elkann, heir of Fiat and CEO and chairman of Estor, is kind of hosting this year's shindig, and he's done it on home turf. It's the Agnelli, the locus of the Agnelli empire. The Lingotto complex and the Fiat headquarters, and they're also, we believe, using the Fiat headquarters facilities as well for this meeting. So we're outside now. We were outside the gates. We're just on the move now because most of the delegates have left the NH Lingotto for dinner. We think that's because they don't really have enough a big enough banqueting hall to accommodate them, and we think they've gone off to dinner somewhere, and we're trying to track them down. We're just walking around in.
Okay, well, look, whilst you're on the move, it might be a good time to bring in some other commentary on the Bilderberg, because I've been speaking just early this week to, a couple of days ago, to Manfred Petrisch. I know he's somebody that's usually at these Bilderberg conferences with you, Hannah, isn't he? Manfred's take on it is effectively that these people are kingmakers. So I thought I'd ask him about a very basic question. What does he think Bilderberg is?
They created the European Union because, you see, they just changed their image. They changed their tactics. And they said, well, if we can't control Europe through the Wehrmacht, through military means, then we just do it through the economy. And that's what happened. That's why they created the Montanunion, which is the first step in the direction of a European Union. Then the European Economic Union, and then the EU. And they said, well, if we can't conquer all those countries through military means, we'll do it through the economy, by taking sovereignty, by pushing one currency on top of them. You see, the Nazi ideology was one Reich, one, what's the English name for Reich? You know, one big territory under one leadership, right? And one group of people. I mean, that's what the European Union is. They just don't call it that, right? So what happened was all those Nazis after the war changed their tactics. They also, put on a democratic face and created the European Union. But in the end, because we have now this democratic dictatorial union, which is run by Brussels, by people you cannot elect, and you guys in England can see how difficult it is to get out. They won't let you get out, right? And things like that. So it's just a continuation of the Nazi ideology of controlling the whole of Europe. That's what it's all about.
Well, that's a fairly extreme view, isn't it? A continuation of the Nazi idea of controlling the whole of Europe, Martin.
Yeah, well, as we know, the Operation Paperclip, the Nazi intelligence officers and the basically the elite of the Nazi party were taken to the US after the war, and the European Union is the joint creation of the CIA and this Nazi rump.
But there were also quite a lot of Nazis in NATO, weren't there?
Well, exactly, and of course the real America is becoming the Germany of the modern era, and of course they've got a lot more nuclear weapons and powerful military than the Wehrmacht, and of course the European Union is definitely a subordinate partner in that relationship. So all this stuff about the European Union being undemocratic is perfectly true, but of course it's been created that way so that we can all be bullied around by NATO, which is controlled by the Americans and Muttley, that is to say us.
Is there any democracy left in the middle of all this?
As an illusion, yes. And of course,
The idea is that it's sort of held up as a theatre thing on the television. So when the kids look at the TV and say, "Is that real, Daddy, or is that drama? Is this a story or is it real?"
Yeah, well,
many of us believe it's real. But what you're saying there is that a lot of it is just fantasy.
Well, no, what it is it's not what it claims to be. And the idea that at one time we had democratic states which had sovereignty and now we haven't is just wrong. There's never been properly democratic countries. There never has been. It's a future project for our children.
I mean, I would say one of the big take-homes from this is check out if your political leaders are talking from the heart, speaking from the heart, or whether they're reading from a script. I saw Macron yesterday. Everything he's saying has been scripted. I want to know who wrote it.
Yes, but the point is that, you know, professionally, if people just rambling away don't actually communicate either. So an element of professionalism in the way you're presenting yourself is not necessarily an indication of lack of...
Well, they're not just rambling away. It's that they are speaking from the heart.
Well, Putin, for example, did a phone-in in Russia yesterday where people phoned in.
That certainly wasn't scripted.
No, exactly, because he's got the brain to deal with anything that's thrown at him. The problem with Western politicians is they're actually fairly low level.
And
unless they're told... Yeah. What to say, they don't know what to say.
The nice thing about reading a script is that any fool can do it. Actually, you could get somebody
who has no grasp of the situation.
It's
basically about acting.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's go back to, I think, one of the most fascinating aspects of the Bilderberg conferences is this whole idea of being able to guess who the next president of the United States is by looking at the guest list. And that's exactly what Manfred Petrisch, the author of the blog All Smoke and Mirrors, Alice Schau and Rausch, has done.
His name is Hickenlooper. He's the governor of Colorado. And he has mentioned that he could be the Democratic candidate in 2020. And he is in Turin now. So since we know that the Bilderbergers are kingmakers, maybe that he has his ambitions to become president, and that's why he's there. You need a huge support behind you to become prime minister, chancellor, or president. I mean, you need a team of guys who support you. And that's what the Bilderbergers are. They can make you or break you, right? I mean, the best example is Bill Clinton. In 1991, he went to the Bilderberg meeting as an unknown governor of Arkansas. 2 years later, in 1993, he was the president of the United States. And the same happened to Angela Merkel meeting in Germany. And there it was decided that she would become chancellor and Schröder had to step down. That's another example. Because von der Leyen, she is there today and she's been there already also last time or two times already. And obviously they are grooming her for the next chancellor after Merkel, defense secretary at the moment. The Bilderbergers decided in 1956 to create the European Union and to create the common currency euro. That was their decision. They even bragged about it, that was their decision. And what happens at the Bilderberg meeting with all these guys, especially the media top shots that come there, is that they are then, their job is when they go back to then promote the candidate that the Bilderbergers have chosen through the media. That means by presenting them in a good picture and throwing dirt at all the other guys.
Now, one of the things that reminds me of, Martin, was in the general election here last year, the massive amount of dirt that was thrown at Jeremy Corbyn, calling him a terrorist, this sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's not been invited to Bilderberg, surprise, surprise. And he's not being groomed to be Prime Minister by the Bilderbergers.
No, but a former Labour leader, that's not John Smith, was.
Yes, indeed he was, but he also...
I heard that John Smith had said, look, you know, he wanted to bring someone like Brian Gould along to the next meeting, but they wouldn't have it. And by the time of the next meeting, he'd had a heart attack and he was dead, John Smith.
Well, he made a speech two
weeks... And then Tony Blair came along to the next Bilderberg meeting.
Well, 2 weeks before he died, John Smith made a speech to the Socialist International in Geneva, where he called for the abolition of the World Bank and the IMF. So I think what happens at Bilderberg is that people get invited, but they don't necessarily get invited back. They don't necessarily agree about everything. They're having these discussions because they don't
think... It takes quite a lot of courage, doesn't it, to actually fight all these bigwigs, including Mark Carney, who's there from across the world, the Secretary General of NATO, and to say, actually, I think you're all wrong. I've got a better way of doing
things. Indeed, and I think the fact of the matter is that they don't have... they obviously do try to control the agenda and decide what they want to do. There are more and less powerful people who are invited.
I remember
and
speaking...
Basically, Webster Tarpley says, what happens at Bilderberg is that's where the line is pushed out. The line's already been decided. They bring the junior officers in to brief them. That's what's going on.
I remember speaking to Jacob Wallenberg. He's the most powerful man. He's a big banker in Sweden. And he didn't want to talk about the idea of secession from the European Union at all. In fact, when I said it, it was almost like a shock reaction in him. His body language was extremely hostile. These people aren't actually interested in any criticism of their point of view.
Well, they're not going there to be quizzed by you, are they? I mean, if they happen to run into you by accident, that's not really what they're there for, is it?
What I'm
trying
to say here,
Martin,
is it's like an incredible, massive, mega groupthink.
Well, there's groupthink involved, but as I said earlier in the first hour, one of the problems for the ruling class is they can't decide what the strategy is, and they're actually at daggers drawn.
Well, the strategy is to still carry on with the EU, even though the Greeks, the Brits, and the Italians, they're not. The idea is that they're not going to give any more power out to the individual countries. They still want to keep this commission, which is appointed, not elected, this kind of thing. They're not going to adjust it. Remember David Cameron's famous trip where he was trying to get more concessions from the European Union. They're not interested in that.
90% of what Bilderberg will be discussing is not the European Union, Tony. It really isn't. That's a bit of a Eurocentric point of view. They're going to be discussing Iran. They're going to be discussing Russia. They're going to be discussing the international finance.
They're going to be discussing Russia.
Yeah, indeed. Therefore, the idea that this is all about the EU is a bit parochial, frankly.
I didn't say that, first of all. I didn't say it was all about the EU, but they are. Top of the agenda is populism in Europe.
Yes, of course it's possible. One of the things they will talk about is that. But in actual fact, the real problems are probably elsewhere. If there is a war in Syria or Ukraine, neither of which are in the EU, that will overwhelm anything happening in the EU. And of course, Italy and Sweden and all these other countries, Greece haven't. The Greeks didn't want to leave the European Union. They wanted to reform the euro, and they were smashed. And they don't. The population still doesn't want to leave the European Union, even now. In Britain, we want to leave.
Martin, that's disputable. Well, there's been a lot more reaction in Greece against the EU since that vote, since that referendum.
Indeed,
but you have to let me finish my sentence, Martin. You really are. And since that vote and since that referendum, there's been a lot more anti-EU feeling, and the same sort of thing is likely to happen in Italy. Since there was a populist government elected, that is to say a Eurosceptic government, and what they've got is now a pro-EU prime minister, that's actually going to increase sentiment against the Brussels.
All right, can I answer? There is quite a possibility that the EU will break up, but before it breaks up, the banks will collapse. That means the banks which have your money in it and the people of the rest of Britain. And the whole idea that the EU is the central focus of thinking is very much English thing.
Well, it's at the top of the Bilderberg. All I'm saying, Martin,
it is
the top of the Bilderberg
agenda. It's at the top of the Bilderberg agenda, but it's not about the EU and Brussels in terms of electing people or not electing people. The banking system is insolvent. And at a certain point, if there's enough rallying and argy-bargy, it'll collapse.
The electoral system is the only thing that listeners and voters can really do anything about.
No, we might have to organise outside the electoral system, Tony. We've got to win elections and do something else as well.
True. Also, though, Manfred Petrisch brought up what I thought was a fascinating bit of research he'd done on some of the former Nazis that had been to the original Bilderberg meetings. We know that it was the former SS officer, Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, that actually started the Bilderberg meetings in the 1950s and went on to chair them for 20 years after that. And then Manfred has dug up some more quite senior Nazis that were involved right from the start.
Well, it might shock your listeners, but I have proven Bilderberg Group is a Nazi organization. It was founded by Nazis. The members who took part in the first few years were Nazis, top shots in the Nazi armament business, and one of the chancellors of Germany was a Nazi and a Bilderberger. His name was Kissinger. He became Chancellor of Germany and was a member of the National Socialist Party. I'm not talking about Henry Kissinger, I'm talking about the German Kissinger. He was Chancellor. I just wrote a story about it, and his name is Kurt Georg Kissinger. K-I-E-S-I-N-G-E-R. Kissinger. Right from the beginning, when the Nazis took over in 1933 until 1945, he was a member of the NSDAP, the National Socialist Party. He was also working in the Foreign Office in a high position in the radio department, who was controlling the so-called enemy radio station. And then after the war, the Prime Minister of the State of Baden-Württemberg, there were a lot of Nazis after the war in those first meetings, which started in 54, 55, 56, 57. There were I can list them all. Armament industry, business, who then were members of Bilderberg. For instance, the head of the Deutsche Bank, Abt, he was there. The head of Krupp, he was there. They were all Nazis. I mean, Abt, who was in charge of the so-called entjudification, that means while he was working at the Deutsche Bank during the war, he was in charge of taking away all the money and possessions from the Jews. But he was then in Bilderberg. Well, by the way, your king, Edward VIII, a Nazi. That's why he had to step down, by the way, right? Loved Hitler, he even visited him in the Berchtesgaden.
Fascinating way to finish that little clip, Martin. Manfred just pointing out that our king, Edward VIII, had to step down because he was a Nazi.
Yes, and most people still think it was because he married Mrs. Simpson, but there you go.
What about what he was saying there, though, about the... I mean, we're talking about this and judification at Deutsche Bank. This guy who was in charge of this at Deutsche Bank, then he turns up at the Bilderberg meetings in the late 1950s.
Well, the head of the West German Intelligence Service, the BND,
was, God, the name escapes me now, but I ought to...
Galen,
yeah. I mean, he was head of the Gestapo in Eastern Europe. And basically what they said to the incoming Allies was, we've got all of these agents in Eastern Europe. He was actually bluffing. They didn't have that many agents. And they said, you can have all of them. And they said, yeah, that's great. So they just integrated the whole Nazi intelligence network into NATO from the get-go. And Galen became, and as you pointed out, the Chancellor of Germany was a former member of the Nazi Party. A few scapegoats were punished, and everybody else was simply integrated into the NATO structure from the get-go. And that's not Germany dominating Europe, it's the US and Britain dominating Europe with the Germans.
This seems to be a sort of network of influence, of money and influence, which is really parasiting off the governments and using the press to kind of limit any kind of criticism or exposure of what they're up to.
Well, this is not something new. It's been going on for a long time. I mean, obviously, the researches that you've done into, Morton, the Battle of Arnhem, all of the Operation Paperclip, Bormann being taken off to Argentina by MI6, it's pretty much common knowledge. Clarence Barbie, for example, eventually gets extradited back to France, but he's been working for the Americans in Latin America for years. It's pretty well known that the Nazis were integrated into NATO at the beginning, and that the European Union is effectively a creation of NATO. When people go on about sovereignty and being told what to do, it's not Brussels that's telling them what to do, it's Washington, and of course Britain, as Washington's Muttley.
Well, it was also the Council on Foreign Relations, the War and Peace Studies groups. Yeah. They were the where a lot of the original thinking about trying to unify Europe, the United States of Europe, was done, and also funded by the CIA.
Well, exactly, because the purpose of that was to frustrate the Russians and to keep Europe dominated by the US.
Perfect timing, Martin, mentioning the Russians, because I also put that to Manfred Petrisch, because Russia is there on the agenda. Effectively, I mean, I put a jokey title, because the Bilderbergers will be talking about Russia. The Bilderbergers, this is what they should be talking about, that Putin will beat us in a straight fight. So, did anyone think of any dirty trick ideas for getting rid of Putin?
The purpose of the Western elite is, and has always been, to subjugate Russia, to make it a colony, so that they can plunder all the resources. And that's what happened after the collapse of the Soviet Union, buying Yeltsin. And he gave away all the state-owned companies nearly for free, privatized it, and this is how the Russian oligarchs were created, because they got all those state-run companies for nothing, and overnight they became billionaires. And their whole aim was, through Yeltsin, to buy up Russia and then plunder it of all its great resources that it has. And what happened then was that when Putin came to power in 1999, he turned back all these things, and because he said, we can't accept that the West robs Russia, and that's why the West hates Putin. That's the reason why they hate him, because he stopped all that.
Well, that's a pretty accurate statement of what's happened. And people, you know, in the West, I was talking to people in the pub the other night, but Putin's a dictator. He's not a dictator. He's been re-elected 4 times because he's actually got Russian national interests at the heart of his policy.
OK, well, we're going to go back to Hannah Borno now. Hannah? Hannah, can you hear me?
Hi, Tony.
Yes. So back live to Turin. Hannah, can you just, have you managed to move, have you managed to find where the Bilderbergers are having their supper this evening?
Yeah, they're actually currently holed up in the Automobile Museum of Turin. They've all gone out because the NH Lingotto Torino Congress doesn't have really good facilities for dining for them. So they've all gone there. I believe it has very heavy Fiat connections, and obviously John Elkann is the host for this year's conference. Then he and Lily Gruber, the other member of the Italian Steering Committee, are responsible for footing the bill for this year's conference. So currently we thought we'd go and check it out, and we're in a nearby park, but we have been detained by various undercover police.
Oh, right.
I'm sitting here with Luke Radarski, with We Are Change Rotterdam, Charlie Skelton and Dan Dick.
Oh, that's great. So I've got the police making
so
sure...
So have a word with Luke, because it is nothing new for him. This current Bilderberg has been very, very heavy policing. It's been very uncompromising. There's been no scope for us journalists to do our job. So Luke can probably tell you a bit more about it. Happened to him a few times prior to this conference. Here he is now.
Hey, Tony, how are you?
Well, it sounds to me as if we've got you really there, because I mean, you're not actually handcuffed or anything like that, are you?
No, not handcuffed. You know, just an ordinary Italian vacation. Getting detained, getting screamed at, show us your papers, getting interrogated. Everywhere we go, we're pretty much stopped automatically and told to give up our documents, told not to film, can't document this, can't document that, interrogated. Today's interrogation was a little weird, though. Obviously, a lot of the officers here don't speak English. We requested officers that do speak English, but most of them don't speak English, and then they were like, terrorism, terrorist. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Why are you guys saying that for? And of course, they didn't speak English, but held us there, asked us everything about us, where we're doing, where we're staying, admitted that they know everything about us anyway, where we go, where we sleep, where we eat, and just we're inquiring about immigration status to see if maybe they could possibly even deport us. Checking out all of our equipment.
I mean, this is kind of normal, though, isn't it? I mean, it sounds a bit more heavy-handed than many previous meetings. But anyway, Luke, what they're trying to do, I suppose, is to divert you from actually covering the conference. Is there anything you've managed to deduce about who's in there and what they're discussing?
Yeah, well, it's a big venue, and you have to understand it's an old warehouse. That was a Fiat car manufacturing plant, and there's underground passageways that they could get in. There's helicopter pads. We were able to confront one of the members, which I'm going to be releasing a video on. But really, again, they're making the story just the show that's happening outside, and the show is pretty ridiculous. Again, just plainclothes officers running up, screaming to us, getting mad because we're trying just to get videos and trying to do our job as journalists here. And it's becoming more and more impossible to talk to these guys, to engage in conversation, and to open up the dialogue here, which I think is very important for this meeting. Yeah.
What have you managed to deduce, though, Luke, from the list this year, the list of participants?
Walked up, said we have to turn off the police, or just telling us we have to stop talking to you.
Well, I mean, yes. Anyway, Hannah, as soon as any of you are free, including Charlie, please do let us know, and we'll come straight back to you. And best of luck with the.
I'll just call you. Maybe call us back. Maybe in about 5 minutes. I think it'll be fine then.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Hopefully. Bye-bye. Ciao.
Martin, doesn't sound like the easiest kind of situation over there for the journalists to actually be reporting. I mean, they're being accused of being terrorists. Let us ourselves go through the list here, because there are some very interesting characters on the list this year, particularly around Google. There's several individuals who are actually part of Alphabet, which is the holding company that owns Google. Mm-hmm. Eric Schmidt, the boss, he's on the steering committee, but apparently he's not in there at Turin. He's sent various of his people. What do you make of this interest that Google has with these financial wizards, the people who are effectively selecting who our next political leaders are going to be?
Well, Google have been major players in Bilderberg for many years now, have they not? And don't forget, Google is it's essentially a monopoly controlling information. And they've just been doing all sorts of deals with the National Security Agency and the military to spy on everybody. So they're right at the centre of events. And of course, these people are multimillionaires, and they got to be multimillionaires by cooperating with the deep state. That's how they did it. I mean, you don't think that these people invented the internet in their garages. That's nonsense. It was huge monies from the government in the US, which led to the infrastructure being created, which then allowed them to become multimillionaires. And of course, they are beholden to their own masters, and they are, in a sense, masters as well. They, being billionaires as they now are, they're some of the people that help make the decisions about what billionaires want to happen.
I mean, let's just go through some of the British participants over there. We've got John Saws. He's the chairman and partner of Macro Advisory Partners, apparently, but of course they're not mentioning that he was the Director General of MI6. Professional diplomat, neither a spy nor a warrior. He has first-hand knowledge of Iran too. He went to the first meeting he went to was several years ago, something like three or four years ago, and joined the steering committee almost straight away. This is someone
he's somebody who said that Jeremy Corbyn couldn't be prime minister because he'd never passed the security vetting. And you see how arrogant these people are. They presume that it's for them to decide who Britain's going to have as a prime minister, because after all, they head MI6. I mean, what's he doing there? He's no longer head of MI6. He shouldn't be going as head of MI6, and he shouldn't be going as a private individual for another corporation, having worked for MI6. I think when we smash MI6 and MI5 and we set up a proper intelligence service, people who work for the intelligence service will work for their whole lives for that intelligence service, and they won't get any kind of careers afterwards.
But John F. Kennedy said he was going to smash the CIA, and look what happened to him.
Well, that's right. And that just shows how long this has been going on, how serious it is. But ultimately, of course, they are actually in a bind, because the capitalist economy has been messed up by them. They've completely messed it up, and they don't know what to do now.
Martin, I think you're being a bit naive there. No, surely this chaos has been created by them on purpose.
They have, because they've
got... I mean, look what they've done, for example, to Libya, to places like Libya and Afghanistan. They've created a chaotic situation deliberately.
They have, and they've presumed that they can control the resulting chaos. But I would suggest to you that the study of military history shows that all operations go wrong and no plan survives first contact with the enemy. They've actually bet the farm on a lot of stupid, reckless stuff. And of course, from a military point of view, it's all wrong. The Russians are sitting calmly watching them, and at a certain point, they'll take them down.
Speaking to some Russians recently, all I can say is that they were ready for a fight a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago, when there was a missile attack by Trump potentially on Russian forces over in Syria. They were saying, the ordinary Russians were saying, okay, if the Americans want to fight, we'll fight.
That's right, but what actually happened was the Russians are trying to avoid...
They don't want to fight.
That's right. The Russians are trying to appeasement of the Americans and the British.
Actually, wasn't there a song in the Second World War along those similar sorts of lines, so we don't want to fight or something?
No, that was from the 19th century. We don't want to fight, but by jingo, if we do, we fought the bear before. I mean, and the Russians shall not have Constantinople.
Oh, was it?
Okay. Yes, so it was actually anti-Russian song from the 1870s.
Really? So, yeah, but the tables are turned now.
Well, they're not entirely. I mean, the Russians basically, they are doing their best to try and keep an even keel on the situation, and the world owes them a great debt of gratitude.
Okay, let's go back to the participant list. This is really the heart of understanding these conferences, and who's there but Amber Rudd. She's the former Home Secretary. I mean, they call her Secretary of State on the list there. But
she's had to resign, hasn't she?
She was forced to resign over...
Windrush.
Yes, I mean... She sounds to me as if this to me is she's the sort of person, if you think about failed politicians of the past, and she quite clearly is a failed politician, quite often they then get rather nice jobs in industry, and this I suppose is a test for her. Here is an interview really saying, Amber Rudd, if you play your cards right, you could be on the board of Shell or something like that.
Well, yes, and also she may be regarded by a sort of pro-Remain factions in the Tory party as a replacement for Theresa May if she should have an accident, as it looks quite likely she may.
Well, that's extremely unlikely, since she's just had to resign as Home Secretary.
No, but that she's still an MP. and the possibility of a reformation. She may have been invited to Bilderberg because of her pro-EU views, because in actual fact she's not in power anymore and she hasn't got any influence except as an MP.
But she's surely, I mean, her political career is dead surely after she resigned.
Well, don't forget the Tory party could break into 1,000 pieces just through its own incompetence, and then various people can throw their hats into the ring.
I mean, is she a serious politician? Is she a real leader?
No. Course not. She's
and those seem to be the sorts of politicians that the Bilderbergers like, the ones who are kind of malleable, pliable.
Yeah, well, you'd have to the people who invited her will have to say why she's been invited. She's possibly was invited prior to be to losing her job as Home Secretary.
I mean, there's a guy
who knows?
Also from Poland at the conference, Radislaw Sikorski. He's the he's the former minister of ex-Foreign Affairs Minister.
Yeah.
But you know what? He's also a member, ex-member of the, in fact, current member, I suppose, because they carry on meeting, of the Bullingdon Club.
Yeah, well, he's very much a pro-British MI6 agent of influence, and he was very, very involved in the run-up to the Maidan massacre, where snipers from Georgia were brought in by NATO intelligence services, including the Poles, because the training, according to one MEP, Polish MEP, the training was that they were all gathered together at Warsaw Police Academy before they were infiltrated into Ukraine. Now, that's just information that's out there. People can make what they want of that. But Sikorski is very much he's basically a NATO puppet.
What about Nigair Woods? Now, it's not someone I've come across before. Maybe you can throw some light on this. He's the dean of the Blavatnik School of Government at Oxford University. She opposed Brexit. Her husband is a Middle East expert. She's born in New Zealand. Her husband's an American.
Well, I've never heard of her. I've heard of the Blavatnik School of Government. Well, I know what that is.
Okay, what is she representing there then?
Well, I don't really know who she is, to be honest with you, Tony, so it'd be silly of me to make silly comments.
What is this School of Government?
Well,
is this where they
Simon Wren-Lewis is based there, I believe. But, I mean, it's basically, you know, you've got all of these, you know, people who fund schools of government are the people that want to control the governments that they're studying, you know. So they tend to attack bright people, but they want people who are going to do what they're told.
What about David Petraeus? He's a regular.
Well, yeah, Petraeus is, he's a hard. He was responsible for all of the death squads in Iraq. That was him, and of course he was then presented as some kind of a great winner of the war in Iraq because he basically bought off Al Qaeda in the northern part of Iraq, and which then morphed into ISIS, which of course was not necessarily an accident.
And what about the reappearance again of George Osborne, the editor of the London Evening Standard and former Chancellor?
Yeah, well, he's
and Bullingdon Club, of course.
Well, of course, well, he's hanging out with his chums, isn't he? As these people do.
What's his grasp of economics?
Fairly limited, because he's got a degree in history. And, you know, the idea that the top Tories are economic geniuses is laughable.
How many unpayable debts has Britain got?
Well, it depends. What do you find as unpayable? It's not just Britain. Don't forget, it's all the debts. People go on about countries being in debt. RBS has just been sold, a tranche of RBS has just been sold back to the private sector at a loss of £2 billion to the British taxpayer. Now, is that the British government?
Half the price they were bought at.
Yeah, so is that the government's problem, or is that the private sector's problem that's been turned into the government's problem?
Well, the private sector runs the government, doesn't
it? Well, that's right, but that's why. But what that means is effectively £2 billion has been handed over by the British government to the shareholders of RBS, who got their shares bought
already,
at that price.
Already been bailed out once. They're going to do it again.
Well, the point is, the people who bailed out, the RBS shareholders who were bailed out, they sold their shares to the government at a certain price. That was the wrong price, clearly. And therefore, they were given free money by the government.
Another
but, of course, people go on about people using food banks,
Martin,
stealing from them.
Another participant is Günther Oettinger. He's the commissioner who, last week, or was it the week before, caused great controversy by saying, oh, the markets will decide and will change the mind of the Italian people. The next time there's an election in Italy, they'll all be voting pro the euro.
Well, what's actually happening is there's a game of chicken going on with them saying, we're not going to give you any wriggle room, and the new regime, Liga, five-star movement. Of course, there's big contradictions between those two elements in the coalition. And what will happen as this game of chicken carries on is that Monte dei Paschi, the oldest bank in the world in Siena, will collapse, and so will lots of other banks. And then it won't just be about Italy and the euro; it'll be about the banks. And this is the danger in all of this. some spark somewhere in Italy, in Greece, in China even, or in the US stock market will set the whole thing on fire. And of course, everybody knows that. The Russian general staff, the Chinese general staff, the Iranian general staff are all working on the assumption that this will happen. We're now discussing military options, not economic policy.
Also, Christine Hodgson, she's come from the UK. She's a new participant, first-time participant from Capgemini, UK PLC. These are management technology consultants. What they do is outsourcing, basically. So you can go to them and they'll say, well, we can get various people in call centres in other parts of the world, workers in other parts of the world. Why build anything in Britain? So is she the sort of person that Bilderbergers will get along with?
Well, of course. I mean, these people, the fact is that... It's hard to know what they discuss, although remember we saw a video that was shot by Hannah some years ago of Osborne being talked to by an ex-civil servant who was now working with the private sector, and he did all the talking and Osborne did all the listening, even though he was Chancellor of the Exchequer at the time.
And then when it comes to coming on the television, he's the one reading the script. Yeah, Osborne.
Yeah. So that's the way it probably works.
There
are low-level people invited who are there to be told what to think, and there are others who are telling them what to think. That's what it's about.
Pliable politicians, pliable media people. Also, Niall Ferguson.
Oh, him.
He's there. He said apparently the euro is doomed and can only be saved by more centralisation.
Well, Niall Ferguson is as anti-EU as you could possibly imagine. So what's he doing at the Bilderberg meeting if it's an EU stitch-up? In actual fact, it's a NATO stitch-up. That's what Bilderberg's about, Tony. The EU is basically a parish council. NATO runs things. Niall Ferguson
knows. He keeps worrying, apparently, about hyperinflation.
Yes, because of all this money that's been printed, and he's possibly right, because if the dollar collapses, all the dollars that are held all over the world will come flooding back into the US and create hyperinflation. But that's not really a problem for anybody else. It'll be a problem for them, though.
What about German Thomas Enders? He's the chief executive of Airbus, but actually he's also chief executive of EADS, which is a military company too. And Airbus does both.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's the head of a military company, and why is he there? Well, they're there to try and stitch up deals. But, of course, they don't necessarily agree amongst themselves. You see, Niall Ferguson's views on things ain't going to be the same as Amber Rudd's. So don't presume that they're all there being told exactly what to... You know, they've all stitched it up. We don't really know what goes on. And therefore that leads, of course, to lots of speculation about what really does happen, because we don't know.
A lot of it is to do, Martin, isn't it, with picking the next president, the next prime minister?
Well, there is an element of it where it's like a gypsy horse fair, yeah, where politicians turn up to be looked over by the buyers and they check their teeth and they check their fetlocks and decide whether they want to buy them. There's an element of that, I'm quite sure. But we shouldn't overemphasise Bilderberg as a decision-making body.
Okay,
what actually happens is that the real decision-makers invite others to Bilderberg to tell them what's going to happen and to sign them out a bit. So we're about to go back to Turin.
Yeah, let's go back to Turin. Hi, Kat, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, can you just tell us, introduce yourself, first of all?
Right, my name's Kat Yvonne, and I am here with a bunch of friends and Bilderberg researchers who have been kind of besieged near the Musée dell'Automobile in Turin, who are basically trying to get hold of what's happening this evening with the Bilderberg attendees. But we've kind of got besieged by all these Secret Service people, and so now... having to now do a detour so that they don't see me walking close by, so that I can sit on a park bench and watch what's happening. I'm sorry, it sounds so cloak and dagger, but this is what's going on.
Okay, can you just give us your... Can you just give us your take on, what's going, what may be going on inside? Because I think a lot of this police action is a kind of, the idea is to try and stop reporting on it and to distract all the journalists, to tie them up, really.
Well, yeah, that seems to be the point. They seem to be trying to cut everybody off at the pass. And as soon as anyone gets close to where the Bilderberg attendees are... here in Turin, as soon as anyone approaches that area, they're not even allowing them close, and so they might cut them off at the pass and grab them and tie them up in bureaucracy and questioning and stuff, so they can't even take a photo, they can't even discuss the place where things are happening.
Okay, look, I'm going to ask you though, why are you there? What is it that attracts you to go and cover one of these conferences?
Well, do you know what? I'm not actually here to cover Bilderberg. I am a friend of some of the people that are covering Bilderberg. My interest is in the esoterica of Turin. I just happen to get caught up in this because I'm quite interested in the archaeology and the esoterica which is embedded in the architecture of Turin. So I'm kind of one of these people that have just sort of got caught in on the outside, but I'm witnessing all of this.
What esoterica? Tell us about that.
Oh, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
What esoterica? Tell us about that briefly.
Okay, so the esoterica. So Turin is known for the esoterica of that's embedded within its architecture and statuary. So there are lots of, if you like, symbolic references to the esoteric, or we could say magic, ancient occultism embedded in the architecture, statuary, and basically the layout of the whole street, which goes back to prior to the Savoy family that had their seat here in Turin, but way back to Alexander the Great and prior to that. So I'm really just kind of researching that and sort of not researching Bilderberg.
Okay, the next question's got to be, Kat, the next question's got to be, how are Hannah and Luke and Charlie?
They're okay. They're just literally being held up, checking to these... Oh, I don't even know if they're Secret Service. I don't know who they are, but they're not being allowed anywhere near the place where this evening's dinner for the Bilderbergers is taking place.
Okay, well, thanks very much for joining us. Anyway, Martin, doesn't sound as if the Italian police want our live broadcast to carry on.
Well, it's interesting because, of course, when Bilderberg came to Watford a few years ago and we went to the, you know, to the event outside it, the police were quite friendly and helpful to us. And I believe also when you went to Barcelona, the police were friendly and helpful. Well, and in Dresden, you went to Barcelona as well, didn't you?
Somebody
else went to Barcelona. But anyway, the point is that it seems to be that you're actually depending very much on the attitude of local police to what's going on. And that in some places, the local police are quite friendly to people who want to report on Bilderberg. And in other places, they're not. I can imagine the Italian police being pretty heavy-handed. That's their reputation.
I put a few calls in there to Hannah and to Charlie, but actually it doesn't look like we're going to be able to get through at all.
I mean, people listening to this show will realise that this is a live show, and the police have detained our correspondents in Turin and are harassing them as we speak. Because as we know, we all live in a democratic society.
And the idea is you're not supposed to actually be interested in what Bilderberg are up to. You're supposed to be watching what's going on at the G7.
Well, it's extraordinary that Bilderberg has got this idea that they can't, that nobody's allowed to report on what they're doing. Because I mean, the G7 and in Singapore, there'll be facilities provided for journalists. They want to communicate what they're doing. Whereas Bilderberg is trying to make it as difficult as possible for everybody to find out what's happening.
One participant we mustn't miss is Mark Carney. He's former Bank of Canada, but his most important job really was at the Bank for International Settlements. Now again, that was it was a topic of hot conversation back at, wasn't it, 1944, the Bretton Woods Conference. Mm. And the world's financial experts, including Milton Friedman, had identified the BIS, based in Basel in Switzerland, as one of the main funders of the rearmament of Nazi Germany, and had decided, actually on a vote, to close it down. But there it is, it's carried on. And Mark Carney, who's now Governor of the Bank of England, straight from the Bank for International Settlements, of course it hasn't been closed down. It's actually governing and running world banking. That's what the BIS does from Switzerland.
Well, they run central banking, yeah.
They do the regulation of international banking.
Yeah, exactly. So in other words, they are the bankers.
And aren't they maybe responsible responsible for the 2008 crash?
No, the crash is because...
the bailout?
Well, the bailout...
I mean, they haven't obviously been regulating it very well, have they?
Well, no, because... But in any case, there are fundamental problems with the way capitalism functions, which makes crashes, pretty much inevitable.
Yeah, like it's called regulatory capture.
No, it's not just regulatory capture. Even if without regulatory capture, Hyman Minsky pointed out years ago, and Niall Ferguson ought to know this, but he doesn't, that what happens in capitalism is what you get periods of stability, which then inevitably turn into periods of instability because of the way the human psychology works. But of course, there's also a lot of manipulation going on. I find it very strange that Carney, who is basically a British civil servant, is going to this private meeting. What the hell is he doing there? I would say that he shouldn't be there, frankly. Is he in his own time or is he in our time? Because if he's in our time, we want to report back on what he's discussing.
Well, he'll probably say it's in my time.
Well, he's not. I'll bet you it's in our time.
Okay.
It won't be in his own time. It'll be in our time.
Another participant, Martin, is Borj Brend. Have you heard of him?
Nope.
He's the president of the World Economic Forum. He served as chairman of the UN Commission on Sustainable Development in the 2003-2005. He took up the appointment of international vice chairman of the China Council for the International Cooperation on Environment and Development. And now he's been managing director of the World Economic Forum. In a way, the World Economic Forum is one step towards the public of the Bilderberg, isn't it? That happens in Davos every January.
Well, I think that, we shouldn't put too much emphasis on Bilderberg. Bilderberg's secretive, and then you've got these other organisations which are less secretive, but the elite have all sorts of means of meeting, some formal, some informal. You can imagine a lot of the informal discussions they have are much more to the point than any formal meeting that they coordinate.
So do you think there's face-to-face agreements being made, kind of promises, dodgy agreements being made?
If they're going to spend the time and the money to go all the way to Turin, and they've come from all over the world for it, then surely they've done it because they think that they can get something out of it.
Also, what do you make of this? I mean, do you think it's really possible that this guy that Manfred mentioned, I can't remember his name right now, what's his name? Hickenlooper, John Hickenlooper. Is it possible that he may get the Democratic nomination?
Well, I've never heard of him before, but I would say that Denver, Colorado, is becoming a kind of... It's sort of an anti-Trump place, it's where sort of, it's in the middle of the US, but it's not like, the Midwest US. It's a very kind of, it's like Seattle maybe. So if he's the governor of Colorado, he could certainly, he would certainly be somebody that might be in with a chance of a Democratic nomination going forward. And of course, that's the first time I've heard of him. And if he does turn up as a Democratic nominee, then we'll know where it came from, won't we?
So many think tanks as well there, but I mean, you've got really here, it is a NATO organisation, isn't it?
That's right.
I think that's the key thing to take away from all of this, is that there is an incredibly powerful bunch of people in the West, incredibly wealthy. I mean, these people represent the bankers who go to these meetings, represent most of the money in the Western world, and they can probably influence the markets in many stock markets. Mentioning also this week that I think it was yesterday morning, Thursday morning, the British London stock market didn't open for an hour.
Yeah.
They said it was some sort of technical issue.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, last week we had another technical issue, didn't we?
TSB,
Visa cards weren't working.
And Visa. Well, it may be that there are technical issues here. It may be that the banks are insolvent and they can't actually settle their they're closed down for a while because they want to keep their creditors at bay. We must be getting very close to the possibility of a crash here. I say this every week, and I've said it for years, but the fact of the matter is that you can't have a bubble the size of the one that's been blown here without it bursting at some point. And it's not because I'm a left wing that I'm saying that, although I am. You've also got right wingers, the Austrian school economists are exactly the same. All serious people think that there's going to be a crash.
Okay, Charlie on the line. Yeah. Charlie, can you are you free from the cops now? Hello, Charlie.
Yeah, we've been cleared. Well, yeah, we've been cleared from the control zone.
Okay.
They know who we are now.
Okay. Can you sum up your take on this year's Bilderberg in like 2 minutes?
In terms of the policing is a little bit heavy-handed. They've been using anti-terror laws, I think, to essentially harass journalists. And, you know, I was just saying that the G7 is on at the exact same time, where journalists are being fated with free food and drink and all the press releases and free footage and copy they can churn out.
But what do you make of the list this year and the sorts of subjects that they'd be discussing?
Well, obviously the post-truth world, there's a certain irony in that being discussed as Bilderberg, but I think that has to do with a lot of the tech there. A lot of the AI is focused on kind of filtering content and, you know, removing inverted commas fake news. So I think it has to do with that. There's a few of the companies represented sort of deal in that sort of how do we kind of police the thought of the internet. And so there's that aspect, I think. There's a lot of biotech at this year's conference, which is fascinating. And I don't think that's just because they like to hear interesting sort of people talk. I mean, there's definitely the whole shift towards tech, I would say, is very noticeable, both in the gradual take-up of tech people into the steering committee, but also the subject's become, you know, they're talking about quantum computing this year. So I think it's very techy. That's one thing I'd say.
What is quantum computing?
Well, I would say I know that it's quantum computing and precious little else. Now, what I do know is that it's set to completely revolutionise computing when it kicks in. Well, I'm not sure when that would be, but it's good. What it means is that Bilderberg are right there on the cutting edge of trying to understand this stuff, trying to plug into it, and of shifting their focus away from their kind of traditional power bases towards the new tech and the tech billionaires and the opportunities that tech affords them, both in terms of profit and...
Okay, we have to leave it there, Charlie. Control. Sorry, have to leave it there. Time to sign off for the Murdoch News at 8 o'clock. So thanks to Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers. That was Charlie Skelton over in Turin at Bilderberg. You'll find me on Twitter at Tony Gosling. He is wishing you a relaxing and enjoyable weekend. Do please join us for the politics show at 6 o'clock next week. God bless, and don't let the banksters get you down.
BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour, live from the Sky News Centre.